Well, we're all here. Festivus poll is out. You want to give it a countdown?
Only if you put the Festivus poll away.
No! Festivus is coming on the 27th.
Okay, I guess I'll count down. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Hi, I'm Patricia Kaufman, and I'm here today with Confederate Postal History, and you're listening to Stamp Show here today.
Return to sender. Stamp collecting happens when we dream together.
Welcome to Stamp Show here today, episode number 58.
Hey, wow. Is that a big deal or something?
Yeah, because they're getting 52 every year. Yes. Every time it gets higher and higher, it gets louder and louder.
So by like episode 120, like Wakanda,
right?
No. And episode 120, concert. We won't care anymore.
Yeah, have a ska band come in and sing the intro. I'm sitting here with Scott, Kaz, Dawn, and Jeff, and I'm your host Jessica. You can find us on Facebook at Stamp Show Here Today, and on Twitter at Stamp Show HT. Tell your friends they can leave a message at country code 1-949-873-4298 with their questions and comments. And tell your friends they can find us on iTunes, Podbay, Stitcher, and so many more. Let's talk about stamps.
Stamps.
So this week we'll be talking about stamp news, the International Society of Worldwide Stamp Collectors, hashtag stamp stories, hashtag letters to Santa. And our expert topic of the week is on international post offices in China. So a lot of international news today.
I had pancakes this morning.
IHOP?
They were international, yeah.
Good one. So stamp news, we are joined via phone by Joanne Berkowitz to talk about the International Society of Worldwide Stamp Collectors, which serves the interests of all worldwide collectors. It strives to promote the fun and fascination of worldwide stamp collecting to young and old alike, and has an active outreach program serving youth, their leaders, and beginners of all stages.
Do they service larva?
Stamp larva.
I'm joined here by Joanne Berkowitz, and she's going to introduce your organization, which is quite a mouthful, so I'm going to let her say it.
We are the International Society for Worldwide Stamp Collectors, and we have been around for about 32, 33 years, and we are a group of people who collect the entire world. Now, that doesn't mean we collect every single stamp of every single country. People collect differently, but everybody collects a wide range of stamps.
Well, the way I heard about you guys was you guys encourage exhibiting. So what kind of awards do you allow for exhibiting?
We have a youth awards. Part of the mission of our organization is to encourage beginners and young people to collect. And to do that, one of the things we do is to offer awards to youth exhibitors. The other is that part of everybody's yearly dues is 250 large, colorful, inexpensive stamps. All of these stamps go to our outreach director, and on our website we have a place where it says free stamps for kids and beginners. And you can send us a stamped envelope, and we will send you stamps. We send out somewhere between 900 and 1,000 packets of stamps a year. We also provide stamps for scouting groups, for stamp clubs. We supplement the stamps that teachers get with the APS Stamps Teach program. So we supply stamps and also stamp collecting supplies when it's needed to a variety of different organizations and also to beginner collectors, mostly children.
Wow, that's exciting. So what do you guys have going on right now in your organization?
Well, right now we're getting ready for the New York 2016 World Stamp Show. We're going to have a booth at the show. We have a one-frame exhibit in the society section that will tell people about our organization. And we're making up packets of stamps to hand out to kids and to beginners and to anybody who wants them. Brightly colored, interesting, often topical stamps. And along with each stamp will obviously be some information about our organization and how to join.
Okay, so tell us that information over the air. How do they find out about you guys? Where can they go to find out more information?
The best way is to go online to www.iswsc.org, and that's our website, and there will be a section on the website that with an application and information about dues and how to join. If they can't get online, our mailing address is Post Office Box 19006, Sacramento, California, 95819.
Okay, excellent. So is there any parting words you want to tell to new budding stamp collectors?
Just that it's a wonderful hobby. It's fun. It's educational. You meet tremendous people all over the world. You get beautiful mail from everywhere. I get the most attractive envelopes around. And I have made so many friends over the years through this hobby. It's a great hobby.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Okay, hashtag stamp stories, letter to Santa. So this is the time of the year Santa needs help with all the letters he has waiting for him at the post office. Did you know that anyone can go to their local post office to help fulfill a child or a wishful adult's Christmas wish?
That sounds unsafe, because you could go there and like get like credit card statements and possibly steal his identification.
Of Santa?
Yeah, run up his credit cards and stuff.
Well, it's already, identity theft, because you're claiming you're Santa.
No. Wait. So, here are the directions. Just go up to the post office counter, maybe wearing a jolly costume, fake beard or elf, costume optional, and ask to pick up some of Santa's mail for him.
Hold on. If you go up to a counter dressed as an elf and say, "Can I have some mail?" They are going to call some people on you.
Guys in black suits, yeah, are going to show up.
With a big net they're going to throw over the top of you.
Your costume will then include a white jacket. With laces in the back.
It's allowed as long as you don't cover your face.
Oh, that's right.
So, anyone going to go grab a letter from Santa and help him?
So we can go up and say, "Hey, post office, we know you have Santa letters. I'll take some and answer them for you."
Yes.
Yeah.
That'd be interesting.
It's a thing.
Yep.
And anybody can do it.
My favorite one, it's been floating around for a couple of years now online. It's written in crayon. It's from a kid to Santa. It says, "Dear Santa, for this year I would like," and then it's like a 400 character long URL for something on Amazon. The kid actually sat there and spelled it out. The URL took up the rest of the page.
Oh, that's cute. That's cute.
You've never seen that? I'm getting a funny look from Jessica.
Wow.
Well,
now we know what Jeff does in his free time.
Right.
So,
Jeff.
So do you send them the stuff that's in the envelope, or do you send them a reply with something really nice and cordial in it?
It has the address of the sender on the envelope, hopefully. So you just mail them their Christmas wish.
Or
a letter.
Yeah, that otherwise seems... I mean, you have to sort of get into it. You have to make pretend you're Santa Claus and, write back, "Oh, ho, ho, Jimmy, you've been a very good kid. Check your Christmas tree on the 25th and... you'll see what I give you." And then, of course, life because, December 25th, he's actually Jewish and doesn't get anything or something.
What if you want to be the Grinch?
Yeah, kind of sounds like the Grinch right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you get, "Hey, Jimmy, screw you, you get nothing." That would be mean.
I see coal in your future.
Stink.
Oh, yeah.
Stink. Stunk.
I picture Jeff showing up in his kilt, wearing a beard, pretending to be Scottish Santa.
Oh, my gosh.
And asking Santa for some Christmas letters.
Some Christmas bagpipes.
Yeah. There we go.
Well, you can show up as Krampus, throw him in a bag and hit him with sticks.
No. I only want the naughty kids' letters.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can be that specific, but tell us what your gift was that you sent to help Santa out at Stamp Show HT, hashtag letters to Santa. So, updates. Cash, go for it.
Well, first of all, this is one Jessica showed me. We're getting some pictures of our listeners. Not just like comments, but actual pictures of them. And what were some of the pictures that we got?
Well, it's called Facebook, Cash.
Yeah.
And it's called profile pictures.
So well, somebody leaves you a message and you can
no
click on their profile
pic. Pictures.
Because that'd just be creepy.
Yeah.
Oh, so this was just the pictures of our listeners.
Right.
Yeah.
That they posted to their wall and stuff like that.
That makes more sense.
The best one was a listener who was doing a polar bear plunge dive in a Superman costume.
Yes, that was a very
good one. That.
And he was built like Superman, too. Yeah. So.
Okay, so they're not sending us pictures? Actually, I know we do get some pictures, but usually it's what is this stamp? Yeah, exactly.
We welcome stamp pictures and only stamp pictures. Or you can mail your pictures of stamps to us at Stamps You're Here Today, P.O. Box 6170, Newport Beach, California, 92658. And Christmas cards, we'll take those too.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
You know what? We haven't gotten any Christmas cards yet here.
Yeah, but by now we've usually had at least half a dozen.
Yeah. I wonder if...
Christmas has been canceled.
Well, honestly, we can't complain because we are sending out our Christmas cards like Friday.
Oh, my gosh.
So we really can't complain, but it is odd that we haven't gotten anything yet.
Besides coal.
Mm.
And Cash's stocking.
Cash doesn't have a stocking. He believes in Festivus.
Yeah.
Oh, that's true.
That's it.
Where do Festivus people put their stocking on the pole?
No, we don't.
That's leading to a dark place.
Oh. Sorry, I didn't mean it like that. Get your mind out of the gutter.
Yes, but we do have our Festivus pole sitting on our table here.
Mm-hmm. No, it's not our pole. It's your pole.
Hey, now.
It is the official PSE Festivus pole.
Oh, no, it is the official Cash pole.
I'm not even going to go there. Yeah. Just no.
Stop feeding him. Okay, so expert topic. This week's expert topic was inspired by our listeners. More specifically, Tony Manusco. Hope I'm saying that right. Suggested to us on Facebook that we could talk about the interesting history behind the many international post offices in China. So when someone says post offices in China, what are they referring to?
Well, China obviously has a very, very, very long history. But what people tend to talk about is post-1842. That's when the Opium Wars were still going on, but mostly over. Britain got concessions. Before that time, the Chinese only traded with the outside world out of the port of Canton. It was called the Canton System. And everything went through there, and that's it. After 1842, the foreign countries started saying, hey, we don't want to just go for Canton. We want to set up our own little areas. And they set them up all over the coast of China and then up the rivers. A couple of the rivers had them also.
Are those the treaty ports I've heard of?
Those are treaty ports. And they started off with five. Shanghai, Canton, Ningpo, Fuzhou, and Amoy. And those were where everybody traded if you were in the West. And again, these all started in 1842. Now, after 1842, there were eventually 80 treaty ports.
Wow.
And the treaty system lasted from 1842 all the way up to the end of World War II.
Wow.
So we're talking 100 years.
So, how did stamps get involved in all this?
Well, the treaty ports, a group of people would all sit down and settle an area, and they would make their little village like a little United States or a little France or a little Germany, and they'd issue stamps because they wanted stuff mailed home. Just really quick going back. The postage in China almost always went through Shanghai. So, and they called it customs mail because it went through the customs houses. And as that started breaking down, as the foreign countries had more control over the areas, they started saying, okay, we're French, we're going to use French stamps. Or we're American, we're going to use American stamps. And actually, USA got in fairly late to the treaty port system.
So I heard a rumor that people would buy stamps in different provinces for a little bit less and then take them over to these treaty ports to use them and save some money. So they started using overprints to kind of combat that.
Oh, that was later on during their inflation periods. Yeah, that's one of my favorite stories is they would overprint the stamp of where you purchased it from. And I didn't know why that was there. And then I was reading and, I forget the fellow who told me all about it. Anyway, people were buying stamps in basically one city and where the inflation was high and taking them to another city where the inflation was low and selling them and making a profit. And so the government said, hey, you can't do that. You can't do that. That's making money that you totally do not deserve. You're taking advantage of different inflation rates across the country. And so they started putting those names of the places on it, and really the provinces, to prevent people from making money off inflation.
Is that why there's so many overprints on all those Sun Yat-sen stamps from the 20s and 30s in China?
Oh, yeah, and some of them are cool because you have a stamp that originally started at like 4 cents mm-hmm. to send a letter. And in the end, it was like $8,000 to send that same letter. And you'd have that stamp and it would be overprinted 4 cents. And then they'd overprint it $50. And then they'd overprint it again.
Then you get like double bar cancels.
Oh,
all sorts of right. neat stuff. The inflation period of China is really, really interesting.
Yeah, I've noticed that makes sense now that the ones I try to keep my eyes out for with those overprints are the double bar mm-hmm. overprints. Those tend to be the ones that are more valuable. So that makes sense. So they were overprinted, struck out, overprinted again.
Yep.
That's why. They've been through the ringer.
So, what other countries were in China?
Besides China.
Like, who started out there? Do you guys know?
Well, Britain and Portugal started there. Those were the two biggies. But pretty much everybody, and I was looking up the list.
Well, you had this little place called Hong Kong still.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's true.
Were they one and the same, or were they split up yet?
Well, Hong Kong's an island.
Yeah.
And that, you know, the British actually leased it from the Chinese. They had a 100-year lease, which is why back at the turn of this century, it was returned to China.
1998, I believe it was.
Yes.
I remember that.
Recent.
Wow. Yes.
You remember that?
Well, yes.
And Macau is actually a Portuguese colony.
Wow.
I remember that because that's when I realized, I went, wait a minute, Hong Kong wasn't part of China for the last 100 years?
Yep, exactly. Yeah.
That's why the economy there is so much different and mm-hmm. the culture is so much different. And
so much British influence.
And the Chinese want to keep it that way. They people of Hong Kong still have separate passports.
Really?
Yeah.
That's weird.
They want to keep Hong Kong cranking out the money. They don't want to say, okay, Hong Kong, you're going to be more like, you know, Jinzu, and all of a sudden everybody goes, hey, hold on, what's going on?
Now, I know Scott and I have actually been to Hong Kong. What do you think are the biggest differences between China and Hong Kong?
Well, I've actually been to China, too.
Oh, even better.
Doubly qualified.
But, obviously the culture is very different. I mean, they have a lot of the same, obviously, they have a similar language. They speak Chinese, the different dialects, but they also, a lot of them speak English.
Well, that's all of China.
And, yeah.
All of China
now.
Speaks English.
But when you go to Hong Kong, you have English pubs, you have double-decker buses, you have all of these Western type of things that you would associate with either the British Empire.
Bristols and bangers?
American. Yeah. You can get, mm-hmm. you go to the pub and you can get Bristols and bangers.
Bangers and mash.
But you go over to China and
I guess he doesn't know what Bristols are.
No.
Okay.
I do know what bangers and mash is, though.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But you go over into China, and the it's like walking across a line. It's very poor, very agricultural, unless you're actually in the city. The cities have many fewer vehicles than you would expect. A lot of bicycle traffic, but the differences are very stark. Whereas Hong Kong has a thriving nightlife and markets and all of that, China is very conservative and very
kind of rural, maybe.
Unless you're in the cities, and even when you're in the cities, there's no nightlife to really speak of. There's no big markets to go to, other than food type markets, agricultural type markets. There's no big electronics market or jewelry market or anything like that, but you do find that in Hong Kong.
One thing that stuck out the most to me when I was there is that they don't trust meat. Like, if you buy duck, it still has the head attached, so they know it's a duck.
Mm-hmm.
And when you go to the meat market, it's not like a deli counter at Stater Brothers. You see the goats, you see the chickens, you see the cows, you pick your cow, and you take it home.
Mm.
And kill it yourself.
So, yeah,
there's no trust. Like, everyone thinks you're going to switch out the meat on them or something out there, so they put the entire chicken with the head, or this isn't duck, this is chicken. Oh, no, look at the head, it's duck. Oh, okay, wonderful. Thank you for that.
When I went to China, I actually had to take a hydrofoil over to Macau and enter China through Macau. And around Macau, they have a special economic zone because, again, Macau is separate. And the people that live near the border are issued special papers, and they're allowed to travel into the special economic zone and buy goods. And as we proceeded into China, I saw a guy literally carrying a washing machine on his back because he had gone into the special economic zone, purchased the washing machine, and was carrying it home. Mm. And there was another lady who had had some meat that she had purchased there and was taking that home to her family. And it was really odd to think. But once you got out into China, you realize they don't have the comforts that we have. They don't have the running water and the electricity. And some of the houses didn't even have windows. They just had open squares where the window glass would be. And dirt floors, and it was just very, very poor. And the guide told us at one point we saw it looked like basically a lawn tractor driving down the road, and that was basically an entire year's worth of income for a whole family to be able to purchase one of those. And then the fuel for it on top of that was outrageously expensive. But that's what they used to travel because
that's what they can afford.
So treaty ports kind of still exist there in a quasi fashion. Like, you have to go somewhere to get the goods that are imported.
No, now they just
have widely distributed.
They just have normal import export now, like everybody else. Back then, if you had a German treaty port, the German ships landed there.
But a lot of the goods are not available out in the rural areas. And you do have to travel to get a lot of those things.
So
they're not delivered to your local Walmart.
Well, they answered the question, too, about what countries had treaty ports.
Yeah, I was going to say.
The only countries that didn't out of Europe, and again, this is 1900s Europe. So, you can't put Poland there because Poland didn't exist. But of all the countries that existed in Europe in 1900, Switzerland and Spain didn't have treaty ports that I saw.
Wow.
Everybody else did.
So does that mean if you go look in other countries' catalogs, they're all going to have, we refer to them in U.S. as Shanghai overprints, the K-series. Yep. Do most other countries have that similar kind of stamp then from when that existed?
When you look in the Scott catalog, you find them in the very back end of the listings. And it'll say offices in China. A lot of them also have offices in Turkey or offices in
I've seen that.
Other places.
Same principle?
Yeah.
Now, the other thing, though, is that some countries, like Germany is most noted for it, actually didn't treat them as offices. They printed their own stamps there. And so you will have a German stamp from a treaty port, and it won't be listed in the Germany section. It'll be listed under whatever letter the name of the port was. And they usually are the Kaiser's Yacht issue.
So didn't Britain also, there's like those junk series, is that kind of in this category? The British printed a set of them, the Chinese printed a set of them.
Well, that was just where the China acquired the stamps and had them printed.
Okay.
Those are just where the stamps were printed. That's not the countries using
right.
the stamps.
You have a London print, you have a Shanghai print.
So what was the thought behind keeping the U.S. stamps and shipping them to China and getting the overprint versus just using their local postage?
Well, when you go there, you're bypassing the Chinese postal system when you use the foreign stamps. You're going straight to the country where you're sending it. And at least as far as the U.S. stamps, the reason they're overprinted with a different denomination is that was if you were going to pay in U.S. currency, you paid the face value. If you were going to pay in the local currency, then you would pay the overprinted value.
Oh,
and that was for the difference in the exchange rates for the currency.
And that was actually for every country. Every country had that.
Yes.
That so
depending,
makes a lot of sense.
Depending on what currency you're paying with, you could pay either value.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's cool. I did not know that.
And again, in the early part, this didn't go through the customs mail. This went through the actual, like Scott said, the mail of the country.
So why were there so many separate ports? Why couldn't they just collectively cooperate? Everybody had to have their own?
Yes, you're dealing with pre-World War I nationalism. You're dealing with the competition between countries. You're dealing with
empire building
and community building too. They want to flood the place with Germans. The German sector was really a German sector. You didn't have, you know, French and English there. They were Germans.
And they spoke German. They didn't speak Chinese.
Huh. And even during the Boxer Rebellion, you heard stories about like the American sector was being attacked and everybody else went, oh, that's a shame. And then went about their business. Later on, they said, oh, the American sector is being attacked. And then the allies of America would go and help them. But then, again, still, you know, the French guys would be over there and saying, oh, that's too bad, Americans. You know, stuff
sucks
like
for you.
It sounds like a bar skirmish to me.
Yeah.
Right? It does.
Queen's Betty rules.
Invading the other team's sports bar,
yeah.
You know. We all drink scotch here in Scottish bar. And yeah. Someone came in with a...
Asahi.
Yeah, all hell broke loose.
That's funny.
It's probably a very serious topic, but that's just what I picture in my head.
So you said that this started about 1842. Is that when the first stamps showed up too?
No, it started in 1842. That was when they the British signed a treaty port treaty with the Chinese government. And I forget the exact... I forget which government they signed it with, because there were a couple governments going on at the time. And again, eventually the Queen won. And so...
You know, but once you have one country do that, all the other countries want to do it.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of what happened.
Well, when did the first post offices in China stamp show up then, approximately?
The first offices were in 1842.
They did stamps right away.
But before that, I mean, you had settlements in the Portuguese and British.
Yeah, but the stamps weren't around in 1842. That's what he's getting
stamps
at.
Weren't a thing.
Stamps weren't a thing in 1842.
Right.
So when did the stamps show up?
Well, you have the first Chinese issue, which would have been the customs issues, 1872, I believe, or 1873, one or the other. You had the Shanghai local post in the 1880s, early 1880s, I think the 1870s maybe. And again, you know, almost all outgoing mail went through Shanghai.
Okay, so here's what I'm picturing. The Germans build a port all the signs are in German.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
The British build a port, all their signs are in English.
No. There's a port. The Germans take these four blocks and...
kind of like gain territory.
Change all... exactly. Change all the signs to German. Then the British move next door and put all their signs in British.
English.
Or English.
I was waiting for somebody to say that.
I don't know about you, but I don't call an elevator a lift, so...
So, yeah, you had, like, gang territories.
Were you going somewhere with that?
No, I'm just fascinated by it, that this was a thing.
So when did they stop doing that? When was kind of the end of the overprint era?
Well, the U.S. had them.
After World War One is when it was really kind of squashed with World War One.
Well, what happened was trade opened up, and it was easy. You know, Germany could get stuff without having an actual German ship go over there and pick it up. And so as trade opened up, the value of these ports diminished greatly. So as, the small countries, they bailed out first, and because they didn't want to bear the expense, they actually cost money. They were actually money losers.
Huh.
So you had to subsidize them. So little countries stopped subsidizing very quickly, and big countries said, no, I want my guys still in China.
It was a political status symbol
of
imperialism. And, you know, you have all of these nations or competing for colonies and things like that. And you see some of it, a lot of it in Africa, but a lot of the African countries attained independence in the after World War II, most of them in the 60s and early 70s. So, but I mean, you could liken that to, you know, imperialism.
Hmm.
Kind of like Risk.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I'm pretty sure I've played that game.
Yeah.
Well, also,
I got six guys there. It's mine now.
Also, it was a pretty crappy sort of trade system because, mm-hmm. We were basically, it was the opium wars. We were giving them opium and they were giving us stuff that had actual value. So we would get silk and in return, they'd get,
They'd get high.
Wow. This just took a dark turn.
It is a dark turn, and it was really the reason why China was so screwed up for so long during this period. They had come out of a bad period and then went into this drug-induced period.
That cliche opium den with the thin mustachioed Chinese men in the black and white movies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, Hawaii had the same thing, actually. Hawaii had an opium problem and things like that. It was a one-sided trade which really weakened whatever country you were trading with.
Sounds like they figured out how to get some revenge, though, because it's one side trading the other way now.
Well, that's one of the things that Mao really said, our country went to hell in a handbasket, let's fix it. And so he got in charge and changed handbaskets.
Well, that and the people didn't want to let him down, so they were lying about the production of this, that, or the other, saying, oh, yeah, we totally met our production goals, and then they were all starving.
Oh, well,
to save face.
I mean,
live?
We're getting into politics now.
Oh, yeah.
So it seems like, making pig iron. Yeah, China wanted to show that they were one of the largest iron producers, so they had every person in their backyard make a little kiln and make worthless pig iron. But they weighed it and they said, hey, look, we're a major exporter of iron.
Oh, dear. That's cute. Okay, so back on stamps.
Back to stamps.
Since so many countries have Shanghai overprints and offices in China overprints and stamps, which ones are the most collectible? Which have the best value?
Today, I think the U.S. is always number one because we have the largest stamp market.
Mm-hmm.
We also have a very small number. It's a very completable section in the book, which frankly does make it desirable because it's a small collection. It's got limits and it's easily completable if you throw a little bit of money at it. It's not incredibly expensive.
And the other thing is it's not widely faked.
It is faked, but not widely. Yeah. You're right.
Well, and the errors are faked more than the real thing, I think.
Oh, like double overprints and stuff like that?
Yeah. Inverted overprints. No?
Not necessarily.
Not really.
But one thing you do have to watch out with for the U.S. area is the fact that used stamps are actually worth more than the mint stamps.
That's pretty much fake cancels. Yeah.
Fake cancels is where you see the the problems occur. And so knowing the cancels, having examples of the proper cancels can help protect you against forged cancellations on the U.S. material.
Now take that in respect to France.
Mm-hmm.
Where probably I would say 3 out of 4 French overprints for offices in China are fake.
Wow.
The high values are probably 99.9%.
Good grief.
I mean, so you have a plethora there, which, you know, when you start getting this fake issue in there, it really hammers on the demand.
Yeah.
Which in turn affects the value.
Right.
I mean, it keeps the values low, because the demand is low.
So the U.S. benefits in that our office in China stamps are faked far less than probably anybody else.
So wasn't there a prolific faker that would do made-to-order cancels on any stamp out of a certain country?
Well, there were a number of good fakers that did do good imitations of cancellations, and some of them actually took genuine stamps and removed the stamp, the printing, and then, but it would leave the cancel, and then printed, then put their work on it so that it had a genuine cancel, but the stamp was fake.
Holy crap, that's a lot of work.
That's crazy.
It is, and it doesn't necessarily work with an engraved stamp, which most of the U.S. ones are. There's only one out of the 18 that are listed that is not. And so that would be the one that would have been a target for something like that.
So they take like a used Shanghai 1 cent, which while expensive, probably isn't as expensive as, say, a used $1 Shanghai.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would, oh my goodness, replace that's complicated.
Yeah. But then on the other side, you have like Hong Kong that printed its own stamps.
Mm-hmm.
And the German colonies printed their own stamps. So finding fakes of those, again, you'll find fake cancels, but you won't find fake stamps.
So last thing, does anybody have any favorites or any fun little examples or anything?
I always love the Kaiser Yacht issue from the German treaty ports.
What's that?
The Kaiser of Germany used his yacht, which was called the
Germania,
yeah, and it's a really neat looking boat, and I love stamps with boats on them anyway. And the high values show like a full profile of the ship, and they look really nice, and I really like them. And then again, getting them in mint never hinge condition or used with a nice clear cancel. The used ones are scarcer than the mint never hinge ones, but both of them are, finding them in mint hinged condition is relatively easy. Finding them nice used or never hinged, those are both very difficult, but that's my favorite issue.
But they do make good looking album pages when you have a nice full page of them.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I know I do at least have, we had one little find that was a lot of fun. Somebody presented us with a 30 gallon tub of China. Old China.
Oh, wow.
And it was all freaking worthless, and we were digging through it, and after an hour and a half or so, Jessica saw a handful of U.S. parcel posts with Shanghai overprints that were canceled. And we didn't really know anything about it at the time. She went, you might want to hang on to that. That's kind of cool looking. And sure enough, it was a fairly rare item. And so we got to find that just in a mountain of crap.
Never know.
You never know.
Okay, so this week we're going to leave you with a new Christmas tradition. goats singing you Christmas carols. Provided by Sweden's branch of Action Aid, a charity that fights global poverty, the album is meant to raise awareness for various ways that goats can help communities in poverty, including providing goat milk and helping crop production.
So and Christmas music.
Yeah. Obviously. That's going to be playing over our outro this time. And you can complain to me about it because I find it freaking hilarious.
As bad as it sounds, as much as you think it came from Cash,
it was
it
me.
Actually came from Jessica.
I bought the album on Amazon already. Hey, I'm helping feed people with goat meat or milk or whatever.
Well, ActionAid is a program. If you look it up, they provide livestock to third world countries. Where they you find a village, they don't have an economy, and so they'll give a goat or a cow to a household, and that gives them a source of income for the dairy products and hopefully eventually having more animals later. So any proceeds benefits that group.
Give a man a goat, he eats for a day. Teach a man to herd goats, he eats for the rest of his life. Teach him how to create an artificial goat shortage, and he's a millionaire. I think that's an old saying from someplace.
From Cash. Okay, you can email us at stampshowheretoday@gmail.com. Twitter, it's stampshowht. Facebook, stampshowheretoday. And our website, www.stampshowheretoday.com, with your questions and comments. You can now pick up Book Up Secrets Volume 2 on our website, gradingmatters.com.
Yay! New Book of Secrets. Everybody buy one.
Even more secrets.
Even more secrets.
Yes. Actually, you know what we should do is the next...
Can we give away one?
Okay, first person to send... first person to give a phone call with an address.
Oh, there we go.
There you go. First person to give a phone call with an address gets a free Book of Secrets.
That's too easy. I was going to say the first person to send us a piece of fan mail.
Okay, that's better. The first person to send us a piece of fan mail... that has a stamp on it. If it has a meter, we're going to throw it in the trash.
We don't want that joke.
First person to send us a piece of fan mail with a stamp on it gets a free Volume 2 Book of Secrets.
You can now leave your questions and comments on our Google Voice answering machine anytime. Country code 1-949-873-4298. There's also a link to Google Voice on our website so you can make the call from your computer and get some free Book of Secrets. And on that note, keep collecting.
This is Dawn. You're listening to Stamp Show Here Today.
Hi, this is Bobby Prager with Gary Posner Incorporated, based in Long Island, New York, and New Jersey. And I just want to say that the stamp hobby is alive and well here, and we love buying and selling stamps. We pay very, very, very good prices, so we'd rather buy 9 out of 10 collections than just a very small percentage of what we see. Also, check us out on our website at GaryPosnerInc.com. You'll see a lot of great stamps at great prices. And any questions, just feel free to call Bob at 1-800-323-4279. That's Bob Prager at 1-800-323-4279. And my cell number is 917-538-8133. Happy hunting out there.
This episode of Stamp Share Today is brought to you not only by the Philatelic Book of Secrets, but also by the Philatelic Book of Secrets Volume 2. Volume 2 covers even more secrets. It can be bought alone for $10 or together with Part 1 for $15 at gradingmatters.com. Get yours today!